Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Music.
That is not the opening song, but this is the Command Zone. How's it going, everybody? I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
Well, you'll know why we are humming that Sublime song in a second, because today's episode, the main topic of the day is...
Magic slang.
Yeah, now we're in Sweden. Yeah, slang. Magic lingo, malingo.
Lingo malingo.
That's the name of a new legendary creature.
That's Kiki Jiki's brother.
Yeah.
cousin, maybe.
No, I like it being his, like, gecko brother. I don't know why it's a gecko.
Yeah,
but...
it's like his disappointing brother.
Yeah.
He's like, that's my brother.
Kiki Jiki grew up in a very strict household. Their dad, Peaky Jiki. Unfortunately, they had one younger brother, Malingo. Mingo Malingo? Mingo Malingo, yeah.
This is just good. This is actually part of the lore, everybody.
Yeah, Malingo, let's see. He has to tap. He also copies a creature, but can only be with power and toughness 2 or less, and he stays tapped for an extra turn because of it.
Yeah.
It's just like a strictly worse Kiki Jiki. And you can only do it at sorcery speed, so sorry, Mingo Malingo, you suck. We're going to talk about magic lingo. Josh, you got this idea from an email, right?
Yeah, so we had a listener, Joseph G., emailed us. And he basically said that he likes the podcast a lot, but he's a fairly new player, and we use a lot of lingo and slang.
That is true.
It was a good message for us to receive, because when we were starting out the first few episodes, we were very careful to make sure we were talking directly to people that may not know all the lingo. And then as we've gone into 70 episodes plus now, and we've been in the magic world for so long, we've sort of adopted a lot of turn of phrase that I can understand from the outside. I mean, I actually went and listened to one of our older episodes. I mean, one of our more recent episodes, sorry. And we did use quite a bit of lingo, and I was like, yeah, this guy's got a really good point. So,
you know, it is interesting because it's kind of an addicting thing to use lingo. It makes you feel like, oh, I'm part of the crowd.
Yeah,
here we go. Mingo Malingo is not part of this crowd, but I am.
Yeah, so we know that there's this crazy secret language in our game of Magic, and it can be kind of daunting to newer players. So we figured this is a good chance for us to look at some of the lingo, you know, let everybody know what it means, also where it comes from. Even if you know the lingo, it's kind of interesting how much there is and where it comes from. So I think that's kind of fun.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to look at all the origins of this stuff. Also, the professor from Tolarian College did an incredible video.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, it apes like an old 80s VHS, like watch it in high school kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where he goes through
instructional
a lot.
Instructional video.
Yeah, he goes through a lot of the slang as well. So make sure you check that out. We'll link it in the show notes below. That's very funny.
Yeah, it's super funny. And because of the format that the professor does, he's only able to cover a few words, so we're going to be able to go in deeper on more, but his is going to be way more funny than ours because that video is awesome.
Yeah, the video is great.
Yeah. So Joseph had two specific questions that we'll start with, and then we're just going to go through a list of a bunch of the jargon and break it down.
Yeah, we're trying to do it kind of fast so it doesn't get too dry.
Right. So his first question, Joseph's, was, what is Timmy, Johnny, and Spike?
They're our friends. We hang out with them. We occasionally play. No, just kidding. These are the psychographics of magic. Now, next question. What's a psychographic? It's basically the profile of...
Personality profile
and traits of a specific kind of player. And again, these are very broad and very generalized. I think every kind of player is a combination of these two.
Three.
There's also Vorthos.
Yep.
Which is the fourth one that... It's like Mingo Malingo. We don't talk about it very much.
No, you just insulted every Vorthos player out there.
Well, it's because ever since our Origins episode, I've been getting way more into Vorthos.
I have too.
All the Planeswalker stories.
Vorthos is one of those things that grows on you as you play the game more.
Yeah.
You don't think, at first you're like, Vorthos, I don't even read this, I don't care. And as you go, you're like, no, it's actually kind of cool. Yeah. I know that, yeah, so.
And also some cards like get way better once you realize the Vorthos behind them.
And you understand why the mechanic is what it is, because you're like, it's like Devout Invocation when you realize, oh, they're actually praying, and by praying I tap them, and then the angels come, like, that kind
and
of
something
stuff
like like Blessed Spirits, which is that dead kids that everyone calls the dead kids.
James Pianca's flavor text win.
Yeah, like that in itself is Vorthos. So the four psychographics, Vorthos is someone that is very concerned with the lore and the history of the card and the characters on the card.
They might just be theme based too, so they might build an EDH deck And even though these three cards would be awesome in the deck, they're not elves, or they're not goblins, or they don't have to do with pirates.
Yeah, or they weren't part of the storyline. Like, they're building the Skyship Weatherlight,
yeah,
and they have all of the Urza characters there, and this guy is not a part of it, so they can't be on the ship.
So they will actually prioritize the story above the function of the deck and other things.
Right. A Timmy is someone that is usually... I feel like this is the one that gets dissed the most.
Even though it shouldn't be, I think you can be a Timmy and win the Pro Tour. Like,
oh, yeah.
Timmy just has to do with somebody who's more inclined towards the big creature aspect of the game. So they want to swing in with dragons or Siege, yeah, Rhino, notably, as a Timmy card.
Yeah, with a very spike aspect to it, and it's awesome. Yeah.
Right, but they're more worried about, like, the spectacle of, like, a giant beast attacking and things like that.
Mm-hmm. I think someone that plays Bant Heroic, or the Heroic decks in Standard right now, where you're just trying to suit up one person to have tons of +1/+1 counters to make them unblockable, that's kind of a Timmy aspect to
it. Yeah, Voltron-y stuff. It's Johnny, the idea, yeah, of, like, I'm going to make this monster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brian Kibler, I think, is notably probably the biggest Timmy that you can just point to, because he is the Dragon Master.
Yeah.
He loves... I mean, that's what brought him the fame that he has now. Timmy in EDH is someone that also just loves, like, I'm going to make this guy a 50-50.
Yep.
Boom.
Deal with it.
Deal with it, yeah.
Yep. They love, I'm going to cast Ulamog, you know, just those big, huge threats that are just, like, make everybody's eyes go wide.
Yeah. What's a Johnny?
Johnny is...
Aside from the Planeswalker, a Johnny.
It's not a Johnny. It's a Johnny, like Johnny Be Good.
Johnny Be Good.
Johnny is the clever player. It's the player that actually prioritizes being seen as being clever above winning. So they want to do something cool. But the cool thing they want to do is not, like, attack you with a 50-50 creature. They want to be like, look at this card. When I then play this card and this other card, then this crazy thing happens. You never thought of that, did you?
And it's not even, it doesn't even need to be everyone being like showering him with praise, him or her with praise. Sometimes it's just them having the self-satisfaction of like, that was awesome. I did it.
Yep.
I die now.
Yeah. I'm the only person that's ever thought of playing these seven cards in this order to create this effect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Johnny loves the combo. They're the combo player. Alex Kessler, our friend, thinks he's a Johnny when it comes to modern, but he's a spike more when it comes to
Travis Wu, I would say, is a very big Johnny, like, prominent player.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, Travis Wu does amazing, cool brews. He just uses cards in ways that you'd never expect. And it has the exact effect that the Johnny wants, where people post it and be like, wow, did you see what this person did with this deck? Even though it may not be super tournament viable or whatever, it doesn't really matter. It's more the respect that they're trying to break outside the box. And I think Johnnies are always trying to think outside the pumpkin, as my old improv.
Johnnies are the ones that you're tweeting your friends or texting your friends and going like, are you seeing this deck, that the Demonic Pack deck?
Oh, yeah.
You know, are you checking out this Jeskai Ascendancy thing? Like, you know, it's just... And that's what the Johnny lives for, is like everybody having that response because they were so clever. They came up with this crazy thing.
Mm-hmm. And finally, there is the spike, or a spiky person, a spike player. And I think the image of a spike actually is very effective in thinking about what a spike is trying to do with their game. They're trying to hone their game to a point where they're prioritizing not making mistakes, making the right play, making sure that they have tight play as well. They're sort of cleaning up the loose ends, and they're honing their gameplay to a point where they can drill in the spike and win a game. Their concern is about winning.
That's what they derive fun from in the game, is winning above all else. So they'll do things like make the boring pick in a limited draft, because that's actually the correct pick.
Right.
They wouldn't pick
Tarmogoyf.
Yeah, Sphinx's Tutelage, these crazy cards. They're going to pick the 2/2 for 2 with Renown, because that's the best card in the pack. They're not going to go off the rails and try something crazy and insane, because for them, at the end of the day, they want to win.
Yeah, they're focused on increasing their win percentage.
Yeah.
And for instance, Goyfgate, like, that's a perfect example of what happens where the spike mentality can sometimes be derisive towards what is just another, not a spiky pick, which is you could take a card that's going to directly help your deck, or one that you want because it's cool and has value, you know, that's sort of the opposite there. And the spikes are also, I think, the most self-critical of their own play. And that's a big thing that defines them, is they'll look at what they've done and be like, I could have played that differently because I didn't do this right, or I didn't sequence this right. And they're more willing to analyze their gameplay to that very technical level.
It's also, I mean, for obvious reasons, the most common personality type that you're going to see in professional and competitive Magic, which are the players that are in the spotlight for our game the most. So it's sort of like the spike is the most noticed of what we see out there as Magic players, even though they're not the majority of Magic players.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But they're in the majority of the spotlight because of the nature of being competitive and being in tournaments and such.
Yeah, and if you look at, like, professional poker players, you don't see a Timmy or Johnny over there, really. They're almost all of them are spikes because that's a game that doesn't give you the freedom to experiment and, like,
you can't
cool
be
things.
Creative, really. Although there are. There are players that play crazy, quote-unquote,
yeah.
in poker and keep hands. And those players are usually, like, preternaturally good at reading their opponents. Mm-hmm. And they have, like, these weird skills that allow them to play in, like, what would technically be an incorrect manner. But, yeah, you're right. It's more spiky for
But
sure.
at the end of the day, they're still doing it in a way to let them win more.
Yes,
so maybe
sure.
it's a little higher variance, but they're willing to take that risk.
Yep.
Another question that Joseph asked about, what is Wooburg?
Yeah, this is interesting because we talk about Wooburg a lot. Wooburg is just Wooburg. The five colors. So if you give each color a letter designation, white is W, so W.
W.
Blue is actually U because B is taken up by black.
Mm-hmm.
So it Woo, that's white, blue.
Travis Woo.
B, black, Woob, black. R, red, Woober.
Woober.
G, green, Wooburg.
There you go, Wooburg.
There you go. Wooburg just
and looking
means,
at it on the page, W-U-B-R-G is, it's very easy to
it makes
see.
Sense. It's the blue, U for blue, that throws people a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And this is also a really easy way to know what the allied pairs are and the enemy pairs are as well, because it goes white, blue, black, red, green. If you want to find the enemy pairs, you just skip one. So white, black, except for green, because it circles around. It goes back around the other side. So white is the opposite of black and red. Blue is the opposite of red and green. Black is the opposite of green and white. Red is the opposite of white and blue. Yeah, and then green is the opposite of blue and black.
Wow, I never thought of that before.
So it kind of cycles around. You just take a skip and you look at the different letters. That's how I organize my lands as well.
Wooburg.
I kind of am OCD about organization. So being able to like know like white should always be first because that's just how Wooburg.
When I was drafting Khanzat Tahkir, I was drafting Five Color or Modern Masters.
Mm-hmm.
I would lay it out that way too just because it was easier to sort of keep track of the numbers and everything.
Yeah. So that is Wooburg. All right, hopefully that helps you out, Joseph. Now let's just go on and talk about a bunch more jargon.
Here comes that Sublime song.
Dun da dun 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 dun
187 creature.
Yeah, 187, call 187 on the cop.
That was good.
We talked about 187. We haven't said 187 in a while. 187 just means it does something when it enters the battlefield.
It actually means it kills something because 187 is the police code for murder.
Yeah.
So basically a creature, a 187 creature is a creature that comes in and then kills another creature.
Yeah,
when it comes
specifically
in.
It's the California Penal Code, which defines the crime of murder, which is why it's also in the Sublime song.
Right. Aggro.
It means aggressive. Usually it means a strategy that is intent on coming at you and being the aggressor or being sort of the one that is pushing and pressing their advantage.
Yeah, they're not reactive. They're proactive.
Correct.
They're usually doing it fast also.
Yes. The opposite of that.
The opposite of that is control.
Yeah, so
control is the reactive strategy, so they're usually not throwing the punch. They're countering the punch.
Mm-hmm. And usually control is blue and aggro is red.
Right.
Although these colors can both have elements of both, but in general, that's the tie
and
there.
When I say counter, it doesn't always mean counterspell. It means countering what they did. So a lot of times you can be controlling by wrathing the board. They played five creatures, you wrath the board. That's a control move. Or
right.
they play a creature and you Swords to Plowshare it. That's
And another word for control that's similar is tempo, which is also what blue does. So let's say they try and cast something huge, you flicker it so that they lose a whole turn. You bounce it back to their hand.
Right. Well, that tempo is usually more of an aggro strategy because you're actually losing card advantage generally when you do that.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying, I'm going to kill you before the card advantage.
Yeah.
Control is usually an attrition-y strategy. So it's saying, like, I'm going to slowly grind out more advantage and eventually beat you.
Yeah, there's a little bit of it in both. Alpha could refer to the set Alpha, which is the original set ever released.
I was thinking more like Alpha Strike.
Yeah, so I figured.
Yeah, Alpha Strike is just when you swing out with everything you've got.
Yeah, it's like send the team in. It's the Alpha Strike.
Yep.
Let's go, guys.
I'm holding nothing back.
Malingo,
Malingo,
you do not get to go, however. You stay in the back.
Mingo, Malingo.
You are the beta strike.
Sorry, Mingo.
Sorry, man, yeah.
Value.
Oh, this has a lot of meanings.
Value just generally means that you're getting more than a card's worth out of your card. So a 187 creature is a value creature because it comes in and it kills another card,
and
takes a card off the board, and leaves you with a card.
Yeah.
But value can be like something that puts a token into play every turn.
Yep.
It can also be
Ashnod's Altar, which converts your tokens into something else you can use.
Yep.
So it's just, it means
Grave Pact, adds value to all your creatures because every time they die, everybody else has to sack a creature. So that's just at additional value.
Yeah. The basic idea of a 2-for-1 where you only spent one card, whereas your opponent had to spend two to do something, is the essential idea of value. You got more out of that because you have an extra card in your hand now or on the board than they did.
Attrition.
Attrition.
We just talked about this a little bit. Attrition is more to do with long-term slight amounts of incremental value. So
yeah, the war of attrition.
Yeah.
That term before.
So if every time you, let's say that I had something out that said every time one of my creatures dies, I get a 1/1 token.
Mm-hmm.
Well, an attrition-y strategy with that is like I attack you and you, even though I know you can block and trade your creature for mine, but I know I'm going to get a 1/1 token in addition and you're not. So
yeah.
That's a slight value. Harkening back to the last word, they're definitely tied, that I get. And so I can attrition you out eventually because you're going to trade your cards for mine, but I'm going to be left with a few tokens.
Yeah. I generally like attrition things in
yeah.
EDH.
It's definitely a very EDH way to play.
Yeah. Next up, we have Grizzly Bear, which is based off the original Grizzly Bears. It's a card. It means a 2-drop creature that is a 2/2.
Yep.
So
it can also be
a
2/1.
It can be for 2/1, yeah.
It's usually 2 mana for 2 power on a creature.
Yeah, and some people just refer to it as a bear as mm-hmm. well.
And this leads to Hate Bear.
Hate Bear. It is not just an angry grizzly bear, no.
Yeah, Hate Bear is 2 mana for a 2/2 or a 2/1 that also has some other additional benefit, and it's usually something like all non-creature spells cost 1 more to cast.
Yep.
Or some other thing that hates out specific other strategies.
Yeah, Thalia, Guardian of Thraben, does this, is the sort of the hate bear that people
yeah.
look at. It's 1 and a white for a first strike, 2/1 that says non-creature spells cost 1 colorless more to cast. So it's hating out, it's not really
it's hating out non-creature
it's
spells.
Hating out non-creature spells specifically. It's not like hating out a player from the table. It's just saying like, hey, this is going to cost a little more.
Right.
It's more of like a price bear, I guess, honestly.
But it's just hating out non-creature spells. If a
yeah.
if a bear, if it was 2 mana and it was a 2/2 and it said all red spells cost 1 more to cast, that's also a hate bear.
Right.
It's just hating out red.
Yeah.
It's not hating them out. It's just hating on red.
Hating on. Be like,
yeah.
yo, you can't come around no more, Mingo Malingo.
You'll hear her say that it's something something on a stick.
Yeah.
On a stick means it's attached to a creature.
Literally on a stick.
Yeah.
As the creature, the card itself is a stick. Sometimes it usually we refer to the card itself is the thing. Sometimes you can attach something to the card like an equipment or an aura and then it becomes something on a stick.
Yeah, usually like think of like the Separatist Void Mage from Magic Origins, which is 4 mana for a 2/2. So
mm-hmm.
4 mana for a bear. It's a 4 mana bear. But when it comes in, you bounce a creature.
Yeah.
So that is actually an unsummon on a stick.
Right.
So it's just an unsummon on a creature.
On a creature.
So
now,
you can say, you know, a 1/8/7 creature could be a
kill spell.
Doomblade on a stick.
Yeah, Doomblade on a stick.
Yeah.
Usually when we talk about on a stick, though, we like it to be a repeatable effect. So something like Kiki-Jiki is a clone effect on a stick.
Yeah.
Because you can use it multiple times. A card like Separatist Voyage Mage just does it once, or a 1/8/7 creature does it once when it hits the battlefield. So it still is on a stick, but in EDH you want stuff that's on a stick that can
but
keep
sometimes
swinging,
it can
know?
Be like Acidic Slime is if it's in a rune deck.
Yeah, exactly.
Because then you can just keep destroying stuff by flickering.
Yeah,
it.
Rune is like the put things on a stick guy. He loves
yeah.
to just grab someone and like flick them back into play.
Board Wrath or Board Wipe. These are just effects that say destroy all X. So destroy all creatures, destroy all artifacts.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it says destroy all non-land permanents.
Yep.
Destroy all lands. These
and,
are all wraths and board wipes.
And it's called Wrath because Wrath of God is the original
yep.
card that does this 2/2 white. Destroy all creatures. They can't be regenerated. Next up, we have Bomb. Drop the Bomb. We're not talking about an actual bomb here, something like, what, Goblin Grenade or whatever.
Yeah, it's not like something that blows up.
Yeah, this Bomb just means, and this is, comes from Limited, and I think, or just in Constructed in general. It's just a creature that is, when it hits the board or its impact is akin to a bomb. It is so powerful that it is hard to deal with. Its effect is widespread, and it is the kind of thing that helps you win a game
yeah.
more so than like a grizzly bear.
It doesn't even have to be a creature. Insurrection is a bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just a card that has such a profound effect on the game that it threatens to take over the whole game.
Yep.
We've mentioned this word already a few times, bounce.
Bounce.
Bounce refers to taking something in play and putting it back into somebody's hand.
Bouncing it.
Yep. If you bounce it, it goes back to their hand. This
yep.
is different than flicker or blink, which are our next words. Flicker/blink is where you take something, you put it in exile, and then it comes back into play.
Yep.
So it actually doesn't go into anybody's hand. It just changes zones real quick, and then you get to reuse enter the battlefield effects and things like that.
Yeah, flicker and blink usually happen either immediately, or they happen at the next end step, beginning of next end step.
Right.
This creature returns to play. Noticeably, whenever you bounce or flicker or blink a token or something that is not a physical card, it disappears forever. Because when it goes away, the thing itself fizzles because it's not a physical permanent or a card that you can put in another zone. Once it gets there, it's gone.
Yep.
Burn. Hey, baby. Burn, baby, burn. Very fitting for me and my redness. Burn just means you are burning someone.
It's direct damage.
Direct damage to the face, to a creature. Of course, the original cards that did this were like Lightning Bolt,
yep,
or Incinerate or Fireball, where you're actually throwing flames or some kind of crazy weather effect at someone.
It's almost always from red. They're the ones that do direct damage to the face of your opponent.
There's some like weird green spells that do it, people always point at. Like there's one, like Bee Sting or something.
Yeah, there's a few in the early Magic, but anymore it's just all red all the time if you want burn. The next one is Cantrip.
Oh, this one, I still don't even know why it is Cantrip. I'll have to look it up.
Cantrip is referring to any card that has draw a card tacked onto it. So if it does something and says draw a card, then it's a cantrip.
Electrolyze is a cantrip.
Yep.
In general, you see a lot of these in modern cards that get you value back because you're essentially not losing a card in the process. Now, the card you may draw may pale in comparison to the original card, but you're still drawing a card. So if you had seven cards before you cast your cantrip, you're still going to have seven cards at the end.
Very good with things like Prowess and things that care about you casting cards. It's good with Delve and things that want stuff in the graveyard.
You can build a whole Shu Yun deck just off of cantrips. Yep. And it's a word of Scots origin to mean a magical spell of any kind.
Interesting.
Yeah. In Dungeons & Dragons, cantrips are like small. Usually the cantrips have a smaller effect because draw a card is on the text and that is pretty powerful by itself.
Yep.
So cantrips usually are a little weaker than other cards.
The next one is Chump or Chump Block. This is when you make a block where you're not going to trade or eat their creature. So it's literally a block that's just trying to save you from taking damage, and you're okay with losing the card. Or maybe you're not okay, but you have to do it.
You have to do it, yeah, because you can't take that damage.
So it's a chump block. And it's usually because you're only going to throw chumps in that situation. You're not going to throw a good card out.
Yeah, get out that chump. Yep. You know where Malingo goes going.
Mingo Malingo has a chump all day.
All day, yeah. Clock. Clock just refers to not the time, but rather how much time you have left, or like what is the timer on. He's on a two-turn clock, means there is two turns that if he doesn't do anything and react to this damage coming at him or whatever is coming at him, that person will die.
Yeah, if the same thing keeps happening, then the clock is how many turns you have to survive if that same thing keeps happening.
Yeah.
CMC, we'll say, which is converted mana cost. So if we say like a 2-drop or a 3-drop, mm-hmm, that means the converted mana cost of the thing is either 2 or 3. And this can relate to something if it's like a white and 2 colorless, that would be a 3-drop.
Right.
So sometimes we just don't want to say the total mana cost of a thing because that's not important to the discussion what color it is. It's just important that it costs 5 mana. So we say it's a 5-drop.
Yeah. And if it is like Archangel of Tithes, which is a 4-drop, that's 1 white mana and 3 white symbols, we won't just say it's a 4-drop because in this case it's actually relevant that it is a lot of one color specifically.
Right.
So CMC is just an easier way of saying like, all right, the total CMC is 5 mana and it's 4 and 1 white. So you have an image, okay, it's 5 total, 4 of it's colorless, 1 is white. So you can just see it in your head. We usually just say CMC to help illustrate what a card's thing like cost is, just so you can really see it, I guess.
Yeah, it's often relevant because if you think it's a 4-4 flyer, well, if it's got a CMC of 2, it's one of the best cards ever.
Yeah.
If it's got a CMC of 7, it sucks. So the CMC is very important to sort of distinguishing how good the card is.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is Curve.
Curve
is an interesting one. It literally has to do with if you laid out your entire deck according to its CMC, mm-hmm, what it would look like. So a curve is how many 1-drops, 2-drops, 3-drops, 4-drops, 5-drops, 6-drops, and on you have, and how evenly that spread and how exactly that spread. So generally, yep, you want more in the more reasonable range, which is like 3, 4, 5 for, mm-hmm, us. For limited, it's probably 2, 3.
Yep.
So it just depends on the format you're in, where you want that curve to be. But if you look at like a bell curve, then you sort of want it to look a little bit like that.
Yeah, and people say he curved out perfectly, which means that you play stuff on time. You play a 2-drop when you have 2 mana, you play a 3-drop when you have 3 mana and a 4-drop, so that you're using your mana each time perfectly, and you're following the sort of progress of your deck, saying each turn you should be getting 1 more mana until a certain point, and you should be able to play a creature or a spell that matches how much mana you have. So you're curving out.
Yep.
Like taking a sick curve on like your skateboard or
got
something.
A sick curve. Top Deck.
Top Deck. Also a web series, Top Decking.
Top Decking by Alex and buddy Craig. If you haven't checked that out on YouTube, you should definitely. It's a web series about Magic. What Top Deck means is it is the card that you pull off the top of your deck each turn. So if you are like, man, I really need a board wipe, and then you pull the first card off your deck, you draw that card, you top deck it. It's usually synonymous with being lucky.
Yeah. Yeah, you can stack the top of your deck, but yeah, top decking usually just means like, I'm top decking now, which means I'm out of cards in my hand. I'm just relying on whatever's coming off the top of my deck.
I have to get lucky.
Have to get lucky, yeah. Getting decked or decked myself, it doesn't mean that you get a sweet deck like a skateboard or a sweet Magic the Gathering deck. It means that you have straight up milled out, and that's the next word. It just means that when you get decked, it means that your entire library is now in your graveyard, in your hand.
Or exiled.
And essentially, the next time you would draw a card and there are no cards in your library, you immediately lose the game. So that's what it means when you get decked.
Yep.
Get decked, bro. And milling is the act of taking cards from someone's library and putting it into their graveyard or into exile or to a place where essentially they will mill themselves out. Usually the strategy of milling means get them to zero cards and force them to draw a card at the beginning of their turn.
Yeah, it's an alternate win condition to doing damage to them and killing them that way. You can kill them by them having no cards in their deck, and then the next time they go to draw a card, if they can't, they lose.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be the beginning of their turn, just because at any time they're going to draw a card. So if you have like a force them to draw a card on their end step and they have no cards, they lose.
Right. It comes from the card Millstone, which was the very first card in Magic that ever did that.
Oh, nice. I did not know that.
The next one is Dome. This is related to Burn.
Straight to the top of my dome.
Yep. If you dome somebody, it's hitting them in the face. It's hitting them in the head. Their dome. That's where that comes from.
Yeah. If you listen to Bomb Funk MC's Freestyler, he references the dome quite a bit. dome, just because your head is shaped like a dome, so it's going to the face.
Your head.
Yeah, the head. Drain. Drain is an ability that takes life away from someone, usually. Like, Drain Life, I believe, was the first card that did this. It basically said, deals X damage, and you gain life equal to the damage dealt, so you're sucking the life out of them and draining it to your advantage.
Yeah, if you drain someone, you do damage to them, but you gain that much life also.
Yeah.
Dirtle. This is... Alex Kessler. Dirtle is... This is a Kessler. Tough one to explain. This is when you're sort of doing a lot of actions to little consequence.
Right.
So it's a famous saying in sports is, do not mistake activity for accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
This is dirtling.
Yeah.
So usually dirtling leads to some sort of crazy Johnny-esque synergy that makes everybody lose. But it's usually hard to see when it's happening, and it seems like not a lot. He's like, I tap this, then I untap this, then I make 4 guys. Okay, go.
Yeah, and you're like, wait, you just spent 4 minutes doing nothing?
Yeah.
But in reality, they're just setting up. I think Johnny players like to dirtle a lot.
They love to. Yeah.
Dirtling can also just be like, every single time you try and do something, I'm just going to do 3 things and then force you to do 1 damage total or something. You're just dirtling around, kind of extending the game with your silliness.
Dirtling has definitely come to mean extending the game.
Yeah, and it also usually means you're playing with your own board and doing stuff with yourself, because you get to get one of these going the next term.
I also think dirtling has sort of come to mean playing with weird cards.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, what does that card do?
What?
That is the most dirtly card.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Engine.
Yeah, get an engine going. Your dirtling is creating an engine sometimes.
Yeah, it's not always dirtling. Sometimes an engine is just like something that's going to happen every turn. Like Marchesa, a creature with a counter, and Grave Pact is just like, I can sack that creature every turn. That's an engine that makes sure that at least one creature from all your opponents dies every turn.
Yeah, sometimes an engine can be just one card to get something going in your deck. Sometimes it requires more than that, 2 to 3 to 4 or whatever.
Yep.
But yeah, getting an engine going is just like, rev the engine, and once it's going, it goes. It can continue without you having to add extra bits to it.
Yep, it's just something that's just going to keep happening.
Yeah.
Very strong in EDH.
ETB, or Enter the Battlefield effects, these are one of the most prevalent things in EDH, cards that do something when they hit the battlefield. So it's an enter the battlefield effect. It used to be when it comes into play.
Right.
But they revised the language. So if you ever see any old cards with comes into play, it just means enters the battlefield. The creature is cast and it successfully resolves and hits the battlefield.
Then some other effect occurs. And these are value creatures usually.
Yeah, it could be an artifact too. I think some artifacts have entered the battlefield. Enchantments as well. Like yep. Rest in peace.
Fatty. A fatty is usually a creature with big toughness. Fizzle. This is an interesting one.
Oh, Fizzle. Yeah. So Fizzle is something, it's sort of a more advanced mechanic. Let's say someone points an enchantment at their creature. It's an enchantment aura. It's like Spirit Mantle to give their, to give whatever creature protection from other creatures. And in response, you bounce or use a instant speed removal spell to get rid of that creature. What happens is the spell goes on the stack. It resolves before the enchantment does. And when the enchantment goes to enchant the creature, it doesn't have any legal targets anymore because it's gone and it dies. So the spell fizzles.
Yep. Pants. Pants is just equipment or enchantments. Yeah. So Spirit Mantle would be putting pants on to a creature.
Right. Even though it's not a pants.
It could be a sword. A sword could be still pants.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Vanilla creature is a creature that doesn't have any text on it outside of that awesome Vorthos flavor text.
Yep, so if it's just a 4-3 vanilla, it's just a 4-3. It doesn't do anything else.
Like a grizzly bear, 2-2 for 2, and there's nothing else about it.
Yep. Gas.
Ooh, that's gas.
Gas means a couple of things, but it generally just means having plenty of card options.
Yeah.
It's just like this hand is gas. That means I've got really good cards and a lot of them.
Yeah, sometimes you'll see people draw something off the top of their deck and be like, oh, that's gas.
Yeah.
Because that means that that card is going to, like, rev your engine, whatever that means. Not necessarily you have an engine going, but that creature is going to, like, for instance, let's say you needed an instant speed removal spell and you draw it. That's gas, you know? Yep. Something that directly is what you need and benefits you in that moment.
If there was a trending arrow, the trending arrow for gas would be pointed up. I hear that word used more and more.
Yeah, it definitely gets used a lot. I think the streamers use it a lot. Yeah. Doc uses it a lot. I've started to use it a lot, too, just because it sounds cool. Like, oh,
even
dude,
in the last year, it's become like more of a thing.
Yeah, just saying that's gas is just cool. Just cool, man. All the cool kids are doing it, Josh.
Gold fishing is the act of playing out your deck solitaire style. So it's when you just draw the 7 cards, you play the lands, but you're not actually playing against anyone. Mm-hmm. So you're like testing the deck just to see how its draws look and everything like that. That's gold fishing.
Yeah. Grip usually refers to your hand.
Yep.
The thing that you are gripping. It's like, what's in your grip? I don't hear this as much.
I have a full grip.
You'll
hear
that
sometimes. That means I had a lot of cards in my hand when you're telling a story about, like, he had this, he did this, and then he did this. I had a full grip.
Yeah, and I can do anything about it. Really.
Yeah. Hoser. So, like, a color hoser would be something that, like, is specifically pointed at red. Or a creature hoser would be something like humility that turns all creatures into 1/1s with no abilities.
A graveyard hoser would be like Anathenza, the foremost.
Yep.
Where it says it hoses your graveyard when it comes into play, or like Tormod's Crypt or whatever.
Back off, you hoser.
Yeah. Jank usually refers to what you think it does. The word itself, I love when words really tie to the meaning. Jank is just something that is janky, something that is sort of barely held together. It kind of does what you want it to do, but it's not all the way there. It's just like, ooh, that's, or something just happens that's just, it feels loose and like not tightly constructed. It's just
a lot of times it's janky. A card that just is not very good, and it's like, that card is jank.
Yeah,
that card's just not good.
Sometimes I think Johnny's love jank because turning jank into gold is really great. Like, it was a janky combo. It's like, it was,
and then it beat you.
Yeah, I pieced it together. It's like the Millennium Falcon is kind of jank.
Yes, totally. But it's the ship that made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs.
That's pretty good.
She's fast enough for you, old man. That's Christopher Walken.
She's fast enough for you. Oh, yeah, I can't do a Walken.
Mana dork is the next one. This is just any creature that taps for mana.
Oh, I thought you were talking about us. We're mana dorks.
We're man a dork. that didn't work.
We're mana wars. mana dork. So elvish mystic.
Birds of paradise, Llanowar elf.
I don't know why they use dork. I just because usually they're 1/1s. They're small. They're tiny.
Usually they're not good for anything else.
Yeah, exactly. Meta. Okay, so this one is very complex. It has a lot of meanings. Meta usually just means the nature of your immediate play group or whatever you're referring to as sort of like the talking about it out, like looking at it from the outside in.
I think it's all the things that pertain to the game that are outside of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So the games before that are having an effect because you know information about the players, but it's not from what's happened in this game. It's what's happened in all the games you've played previous.
Yeah.
Or any conversation you had at dinner the other night that's playing into like you know, something that you're doing in the game now. That's meta.
Yeah, in competitive Magic, the meta is set by the Pro Tour usually. So after the Pro Tour, like, for instance, a red deck took down the Pro Tour, you're going to see more of those at your Friday Night Magic.
Because... in the meta, but that's information that you have from another tournament, not the tournament you're playing in, but it does affect it.
It does affect it. Sometimes in your FNM, you know that you just have a lot of players that hate Mono Red and won't play it. So you're like, all right, cool. We'll see how much this affects the meta.
Right. Flood. This is way too much mana. So when you draw just land after land after land and no gas.
Yeah. The opposite of that is Mana Screw. When you don't have enough mana, you don't have the lands you need. You're just screwed out of lands or even just a specific color.
Yep. What would you rather, Flood or Mana Screw?
Mana Screw. Especially in EDH, because your games are going to go long and you will draw your mana eventually. And you're going to have a more full grip than your opponents.
I might want Flood, because if I just draw one card that draws me cards, I'm going to be okay. And then I can play big stuff. But I don't know. That's a tough one.
Depends on the deck, as usual.
Yeah. Non-bow.
Oh, yeah.
This is the opposite of combo.
Yeah.
So this is something that, like, the two cards work together in anti-synergistic manners.
Yeah.
So it's like if you put something came into play and it wants to deal with your graveyard, but the card you just played before it exiled your own graveyard. That'd be a non-bow.
It'd be a non-bow. It'd be like playing a creature that says, like, when this creature dies and hits the graveyard, it does this, and then you play Anafenza, so no creatures ever actually hit the graveyard.
Right.
That's it's a non-bow. Sometimes you're forced into playing non-bows. Right now, the Rally of the Ancestors deck has a bit of some non-bow synergy in there.
But the rest of the synergy is so good that it makes up for it.
You just have to let it be.
I've found oftentimes you just accidentally are like, oh, that's a non-bow.
Yeah, that's definitely the most common.
I built this deck, and it's supposed to do all this stuff, but I never thought about how some cards would interact in weird ways, and these two don't work together good.
Next up, we have the nuts, or the nut draw.
This is a poker term.
Yeah.
So the nuts were basically like your car keys for your horse in the Old West days. And so what would happen is if you'd be in a poker game in like a saloon in the Wild Wild West, and you'd come down to the betting, you'd be out of money, and you'd throw your nuts in to the middle, which means you're betting your horse. If you're betting your horse, then you have a really good hand, usually the best possible hand, because you would never bet the nuts otherwise.
Yeah.
So then the best possible hand started to become known as the nuts. I got the nuts.
Yeah.
So that usually means it's an unbeatable hand, or an unbeatable draw would be the nut draw.
Yeah, the nut draw does not happen in EDH as much because it's just a multiplayer format. It'll happen in games like there's that Primeval Titan deck that's running around Modern, and you can get the nut draw, which is a 7-card hand that can let you win on turn one.
Yep, and that's just unbeatable.
Unbeatable.
So it's just the nuts.
Yeah. Outs. Yeah. Playing to your outs. Outs just means you're in a situation, how do you get out of it? And those are your outs. Sometimes the outs is as simple as get rid of that creature. Other times,
but that means your out is probably Swords to Plowshares.
Right.
You can probably, in some situations, list every card in your deck in your mind that will get you out of this situation. Because sometimes it's just like any board wrath. I have 5 of them in my deck, which means I have 5 outs out of however many cards are left.
Yeah, exactly. And also playing to your outs usually means figure out how you're going to get out of the situation and play towards that. Don't be like, all right, well, this guy's going to keep hammering at me with this creature, so I'm just going to chump with one creature each turn. Maybe it's like, no, you're going to need to block with all your creatures one turn and just take it and trade a bunch. Otherwise,
because you have no other way to beat that creature.
You have no other way to beat that creature, yeah. And the more that you just sit there and let him win the war of attrition, you're going to lose the game. So play to your outs is what that means.
A pinger, or a Tim, if you've been listening to the show for very long, you know what this is. But it's just any creature or thing that taps to deal 1 damage to target creature or player. So it pings you, or it pings, I'm going to ping that creature. I'm going to Tim it. That just means I'm going to use an effect that deals 1 damage.
Sometimes it's only a creature as well. It'll still ping the creature. Yep. Sometimes it's only the player, like Chandra, the new Chandra.
Right, yeah, she's still a pinger.
Pip usually refers to the mana symbol in a card.
That's actually on the battlefield.
On the battlefield, yeah. So, for instance, Devotion cares about what your devotion to a color is, and it just means how many pips of that color. So if you have something that costs 3 colorless and 2 green, there are 2 pips there.
Right.
And that counts for 2 green pips. Pip.
Pitch. So somebody says, I had to pitch a card. It usually just means discard.
Yeah, toss it at someone really fast is what it means. 80 miles an hour plus.
This is an interesting one. It comes up once in a while. Playset. It just means if you own a playset of something, I have a playset of that. It means you have 4 of them.
It's not just a set you play with?
No, and it's interesting for EDH players because we can only play one of any given card in our deck. So for us, a playset is actually one, but playset still means four because in the other constructed formats, you can have up to four.
Four of, yeah. Proxy is a card that is not the actual card, and you're going to replace that card with a proxy, just essentially a fake version of it, a placeholder.
Yep, it's exactly, a placeholder. Yeah. Punt. Punt is a misplay. So if you punt, I punted. It means I had a better play, maybe a game-winning play or a game-altering play, and I did the wrong thing.
Or I didn't block correctly, or I could have done something right.
I sequenced something incorrectly.
Yeah, it's kind of from football, right?
Yeah, because when you punt, it means you're giving the ball back to the opponent.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes punts can vary on their severity level. Sometimes they're a minor punt where it's like, oh, I lost a little bit of value there. I could have gotten one extra damage in. That's not a full-on punt. A full-on punt is like, I had the winning play and I didn't do it. Yep. Or I did something that could have saved my life, but I forgot to or whatever.
Those are the worst punts that cost you the game.
Yeah, that makes me very salty. We'll talk about that in a second.
The next one is Mana Rock. That's just an artifact that taps for mana.
Mm-hmm.
The artifact part's the rock. The mana, obviously, is the mana that comes from it.
So it's like Mana Dork, but this time it's a rock.
Yep.
Sack. Sack is short for sacrifice. Many different creatures force you to sacrifice a creature, also known as an edict effect, because Diabolic Edict, was that the original one that did it?
Sure.
Who knows? It has edict.
It's called, edict effect is making people sack things.
Yeah.
A sack outlet.
A sack outlet, yeah. Sack outlet is not a place where you can buy like cheap sack-based clothing.
It's not like Gap Outlet.
Yeah, it's a sacrifice outlet. It's a place where you can plug in your things to be sacrificed for free, usually, or for a very small cost by tapping it or whatever.
It just means you can sacrifice a creature when you want on demand, at least one.
Yeah, exactly. Salty.
You'll hear this one a lot.
Yeah, it just means that you're kind of on tilt a little bit. We'll talk about tilt in a later, but it just means that you're angry or upset at a result, and you are complaining about it. You are like, grr.
Yeah, you're sort of a little bit like vocally annoyed or frustrated.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even have to be about Magic. You can just be salty about the announcement that there aren't any enemy fetch lands in Battle for Zendikar.
Like, you can be salty about a lot of things.
Yeah.
Usually not worth it. It just means you're kind of complaining. But also being salty means you're airing your grievances. So
that's a good way to put it.
Everyone's got it in them.
Silver Bullet. This is like
that
perfect card that just the deck you're playing against does not have an answer for, and it just literally, it's the silver bullet to the werewolf.
Yep. It's the one thing that
it's
takes
him kryptonite.
Down. Yeah, sometimes it doesn't need to be the full-on kryptonite. It can just be just good enough that the other player can't answer it.
Yep.
Or it's like one threat that you put down that you were able to protect through the whole game, and it just ended up owning them. Like, Annamar is the silver bullet to an Orzhov deck.
Yeah.
Unless they have artifact-based disruption.
But even then, it's your commander. You can play it a few times. They're not going to be able to deal with it that many times. Yeah.
Snap, as in sort of a snap keep. It just means you're keeping something snap. You look at it, boom, I'm going to keep it. You don't even need to think about it. It's a snap keep. It looks
snap
so
block,
good.
Snap block. Snap attack.
Snap attack, yeah.
Yeah, it's just you made a decision without having to think about it very much.
Yeah, it's a very obvious thing to you. Snap might also refer to Snapcaster Mage, so if you snap something back.
Yeah, it's good.
It's more in Modern, though. Splash.
Splash is when you have cards that are of a color that you don't have very much of that color represented in your deck. So you might play an Annamar deck where the red part of it is just a splash.
Sounds about right for most decks. With red, usually in EDH, it's usually the lightest color there. In like a limited deck of 40 cards, you usually shouldn't splash, but if you're going for
depends on the format.
Depends on the format. Depends on how much fixing you have. Fixing means the ability to fix your mana, so different lands that give you different colors or different artifacts that give you different colors. Splash is just literally, we're just like going to paint this red and blue, and then we're going to have a splash of green at the top. Kind of like that.
Swing. Swing is just attacking. I swing with this guy.
Or a game can swing in your favor as well. But yeah, usually like this guy swings at you. I guess it kind of is similar to tapping, kind of the motion of swinging. Wheel or table doesn't really refer to EDH as much as it does to like limited and constructed. It can actually refer to EDH, but in general, when you're like drafting, for example, you open a pack and there's 15 cards in there. You see two cards you want, and you draw. You take one, and you're like, I hope this other one wheels or goes around the table or at tables. So it goes all the way around and gets back to you.
Right. Now, we'll refer to a rotation of the table in EDH or a wheel of the table, meaning that if I play Doubling Season and then it makes it through a rotation of the table, that means every other player's turn came and it came back to me and that card survived.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, here you go.
Tilt.
Is another poker term.
Another poker term. Yeah, where did it come from?
Going
full,
on,
Full Tilt Poker, by the way, is like the name of a poker company.
Yeah, it's
right?
a very big poker website. But Tilt's been around forever before internet even existed. Tilt, I don't know the etymology, but I know what it means. When you're on tilt, it usually means that you're making bad decisions because you're angry about the result of a previous hand of poker.
Yeah, you're salty, you're emotional, you're being irrational.
And you're therefore playing badly because of it. So,
yeah, yeah.
And you might also like act out in a weird manner. It's usually an angry person who's not acting like themselves. And generally, when you're on tilt in poker, you're going to lose a lot more money. It's basically like if you know you're on tilt, you should walk away from the table. And in Magic, you can't always do that because you're at a tournament or something. It usually means you're going to play badly because
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, you're going to make bad decisions. You're going to punt more often when you're on tilt, as yep. they say. Also, if you play, I guess... pinball, you can tilt the machine and
oh
turn it
yeah
off. Maybe
that's
that,
good
maybe that has something to do with it, who knows.
Actually, good pinball players like hit the machine at the right point to like,
yeah, give it just a teeny bit of
just
tilt.
So it doesn't go into the little yeah. slots on the side where the ball always goes when I'm playing pinball.
Yeah,
that's a good one. Trick, this is usually like a combat trick.
Yeah,
so that's just an instant speed way to usually pump or modify the power and toughness of your creatures or maybe their creatures or if it has death touch all of a sudden or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or just like, well, I'll instant speed bounce this thing as the trick and
yeah,
now the
true.
Block that you made sucks or whatever.
Yep.
Tuck, we talked a lot about this in our Tuck rule debate with Sheldon Menery and just the Tuck in general. Tuck means taking a card and putting it back into your deck, either on the bottom or
shuffling
into it. Yeah, it just essentially gets tucked away. You're putting it away.
It's an alternate way to remove a creature. So there's exile, there's mm-hmm. graveyard, there's bounce back to their hand, and there's tuck. Tutor is just any card that goes and finds a specific card in your deck.
Yeah, this is one of those weird words that doesn't actually mean what it actually means.
Because
a tutor is someone that teaches you something, and the demonic tutor is like it's the idea of teaching you by putting the card in your hand or finding it and giving it to you.
But it's really just like this name because the very first card that did this was Demonic Tutor.
Yeah, it's a way of, yeah.
Voltron.
Voltron. It is the Defender of the Universe, right?
Yeah,
Voltron.
It's an old cartoon, Saturday
yeah.
morning cartoon.
So what it was is a team of space explorers that sort of pilot a giant super robot that was called Voltron. And in EDH and in just regular Magic, it means suiting up one specific creature or thing to be giant, massive, and like have a huge sword and sweet boots on and a cool cape.
Well, the team that piloted the super robot were actually a bunch of separate spaceships that could come together mm-hmm. and form the giant super robot. So it's this idea of building a big, powerful creature. It's starting with something and then adding things to it until it's one super creature.
Yep. Super creature. And there's also a strategy in EDH where you Voltron your commander to kill someone in like two swings by getting them to 21 commander damage.
Yep. Wedge or a shard. So Wedge is our friend from the Mana Source, but also a wedge. Wedges and shards are just three color combinations.
Mm-hmm.
So they all have names now. You've heard them. Obzon, Jeskai, Naya, Bant, all that stuff. Shards are from Shards of Alara. Wedges are from Khans of Tarkir. Yep, that's it. They're just the different three color combinations that are possible.
Yep, and if you look at the back of the card, a shard is like a slightly triangle with a longer long side base. It's a color, and they're two.
It's just three in a row, right?
Yeah, three in a row, and then wedges are like pizza shapes where they cut across, where it's an enemy pair, and then they're a shared. Oh no, an allied pair, and they're shared enemy color.
Yeah.
Yard/bin just is another way to say the graveyard, or to bin something. It's just like the British way of saying
put it in the
can.
Bin.
Put it in the bin, yeah.
Yep.
It gets binned.
Yep. So that's kind of, this is not every single piece of lingo, malingo. it's a lot of it, though. The thing is to not be intimidated by slang and lingo that people are saying. If you don't know, just ask. You know, a great thing about Magic players is they're super happy to talk about their game and to introduce it to new players. So they'll usually be like, oh, this is what that means.
Yep.
Yep. And if anybody gives you any flack, like, you don't know what that means, feel free to laugh at them because there's still tons of lingo that I hear it and I'm like, what is that?
And that's just not inclusive. Come on.
I mean, that's on them. That's not on you. Don't allow that a person that acts like that to make you feel bad. That's,
don't go on tilt because someone else is, you know,
salty
about your lack of lingo malingo knowledge. We did it, boys.
We did it. So now we move on to the end step where we talk about something cool outside of the world of magic. If you don't follow me on Twitter, then you don't know that my puppy dog, Luna, was the dog of the week at our doggy daycare.
Yay,
Luna. There's a lot of people out there going like, doggy daycare. And trust me, I think it's as ridiculous as you think it is. But we still have to do it.
She's the best. She won.
She was the first ever, too. They just started this program, and she was the unanimous pick.
Really? Unanimous?
Yeah. Unanimous.
Luna, yay. Let's talk about doggy daycare. Oh, God.
How much money do I spend on that crap?
Kiwi has to go to doggy daycare quite often when we are out for the day. But she loves it. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. Luna loves it. Like, and I love it, too, because she's exhausted.
Yeah, just goes straight to bed.
It's the best. She just curls up on the couch right next to you. She doesn't do all the normal stuff, like, play for like 12 hours straight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they've just been running around meeting new friends, sniffing all the butts.
Sniffing all the butts.
Yeah, that's what happens.
Hold on to your butts.
Hold on to your butts, kids.
All right. That was the least exciting end step of all time, but it's what we did.
Listeners, do you have dogs? Send us a picture, tweet at us, let us know. We'll have a listener dog contest. And also, if you've made a card name up for your... Actually, we should make cards for our dogs.
That is actually awesome.
I'm going to make a Kiwi card.
Yeah. We're going to pick our own dog of the week.
And they're going to be legendary doges. That's what they'll be. This legendary doge.
They'll be Mingo Malingo's cousin, Doggo Malongo.
Doggo Malongo. We're going to take Dingo Malingo Bingo, whatever his name is, into the... We're going to speak about him every episode.
Somebody better make a Mingo Malingo card. He'll just have his arm around Kiki Jiki, but Kiki will be looking like all like pissed, like, don't put your arm around me.
Oh, God.
I don't know you.
Yeah.
All right.
I will not copy you.
Make sure to check out the Masters of Modern podcast, our sister podcast. It's about modern and all things competitive magic. You can find them on Twitter at the MMcast.
Yep, and our editor for the show is Eli Cuevas. Special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer at Living Cards MTG. He does the animations on our videos. You can check those out at youtube.com/TheCommandZonePodcast.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening.
And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com. Or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly. Which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.